A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I am glad that you've joined us today. The us is Dave Adams of the Virginia Shooting Sports Association, who's going to join me here in just a couple minutes talking about the latest in the state of Virginia. As well as, I asked Dave a couple of questions about the Democratic debate in South Carolina on Tuesday night because I was very curious about something. You know, we in Virginia, we saw Michael Bloomberg step in 2019 in the elections, spent several million dollars targeting about a dozen or so districts around the state of Virginia. And he just poured money into those districts and didn't win every race, but he got enough of his gun control candidates elected that the Democrats took control of the state Senate by a 21-19 margin, took control of the House of Delegates, I believe 55-45 is the margin in the House in terms of Democrats versus Republicans. And on the debate stage in South Carolina last night, Bloomberg let it slip that he feels like he bought Nancy Pelosi a Democrat majority in the House. When he was talking about his, you know, free spending on candidates, he kind of let it slip. And we got these candidates. It's a very telling moment about Michael Bloomberg. So we talked with Dave Adams about that as well. The other big moment from the debate last night, Joe Biden once again seemingly unable to utter a single sentence without getting some fact wrong. Biden claimed that since 2007, 150 million Americans have died from gun violence. Well, I don't know where he pulled that number from, but it's an absurd number. That's about a little less than half the population of the United States. Here's the truth. In this country every year, there are about 12,000 homicides total. Somewhere between 12,000-14,000 homicides total. And that's gun-related homicides, fist-related homicides, blunt object-related homicides. About 10,000 homicides every year are firearm-related. There are about 20,000 deaths in this country that are suicide by firearm. And that's the total number of gun deaths, not 150 million since 2007, but about 30,000 a year. And the violent crime numbers have actually been dropping. The gun-related suicides have been increasing along with non-gun-related suicides. So we don't have a gun suicide problem. We have a suicide problem in this country. Gun control advocates want to treat this mental health problem as a gun control issue. We just saw in New Mexico, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham signed the state's red flag bill into law, and again talked about how it's going to prevent suicides. I don't mean to be pessimistic, but I don't think it will. Because in the states that we have seen these red flag laws on the books for the longest period of time, states of Indiana and Connecticut, suicides have not decreased. They have increased in both states since the red flag laws were put on the books. Now, gun-related suicides have declined a little bit in both of those states. That's true. But the overall suicide rate is not. The overall suicide rate has increased. Non-gun-related suicides have more than made up for the slight decline in gun-related suicides. I don't know about you, but I don't think if we're trying to address the issue of people in a mental health crisis who are going to take their own life or the lives of others, I don't think we should be trying to just say, well, use pills or, you know, use a belt. I think we should actually, if we've decided that this is a problem and we want to try to fix it, then you have to deal with the individual. And you have to try to get that individual help. And these red flag laws do not do that. They take any legally owned firearms away. They leave them with their pills, with their knives, with their belts, with their matches, with their gasoline, with their car keys. Good luck. That's what they say. And that's why these bills do not reduce suicide. Now, we've got a red flag bill that's making its way through the Virginia legislature. One of the items we talked about with Dave Adams of the Virginia Shooting Sports Association. Take a look and a listen. Dave Adams, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the program. It's good talking with you today.
Thanks for having me back, Tim.
Absolutely. Now, listen, before we talk about what's going on in the Virginia legislature, I've just got to ask you your reaction to a moment last night during the Democrat debate in South Carolina where Michael Bloomberg, actually, I guess a couple of Bloomberg moments. The first where he slipped and he ended up saying something very true that, you know, he ended up buying. And then he corrected himself. No, we got these 21 Democrats elected in the U.S. House of Representatives. But, you know, Bloomberg's first statement, I think, was the far more accurate one, that he bought these candidates. We saw this happen in Virginia as well. When you heard Bloomberg let it slip that, you know, yeah, he's buying influence. What was your reaction?
The truth always comes out at some point, kind of like with Beto O'Rourke. You know, it's exactly what happened here in Virginia. You know, those guys are owning him, paying him back for getting them the majority. That's why he was their speaker at their big gala here a couple weekends ago.
And what's your advice to voters around the country, you know, in terms of stopping Bloomberg from buying elections?
You know, I think Virginia has awakened a lot of people. I was talking to the NRA lobbyist down at the General Assembly a couple of Mondays ago, and he also has North Carolina, and he says they're going to make sure that what happened to us doesn't happen to them. So I think Virginia has awakened a sleeping giant around the country.
I certainly hope so. You know, the other moment was when all of the candidates were asked about what they would do to pass gun control through Congress. And Bloomberg talked about, well, you know, I started two organizations, Every Town for Gun Safety, Moms Demand Action. I got to tell you, Dave, there were a lot of ticked off gun control activists on social media on Tuesday evening who really felt like and have for some time felt that Bloomberg really, you know, is just using them. You know, when he first announced his candidacy, he rented out the Moms Demand Action and Every Town mailing lists. You know, they have not endorsed a candidate. They're all about the quote unquote gun sense candidates. But it just really struck me that I think a lot of these gun control advocates are starting to wake up to what kind of guy Bloomberg really is.
Well, you know, they all kind of owe their soul to him because he's been funding the movement now. He is the movement. His money is the movement. And we told people as far back as 4 or 5 years ago, don't take this guy for granted. You know, we had said in the past that, you know, money can't buy elections. But if you can't turn on a TV, and my 15-year-old daughter says she can't watch YouTube without seeing a Bloomberg ad.
Yeah. I know. I'm not the world's smartest guy when it comes to running political campaigns. Bloomberg can certainly afford to hire smart guys, but I just have to think that Americans are going to be as sick of Bloomberg as gun owners in particular have been by the time you know, November rolls around, even if he does get the nomination. I don't know that he will, but you know, I think the more people hear from Bloomberg, the less they like him, honestly.
Yes, I'm trying to remember the way Jim Garrity described him last night. But basically he's not very, he doesn't come across as well. Like, I think Jim said he was the male version of Elizabeth Warren's demeanor. He just comes across as very nasty and very arrogant.
Yeah. And you know, a scolding kind of guy, you know, constantly chastising Americans. Anyway, we could talk about Michael Bloomberg for hours, Dave. Let's shift our focus to what's going on in Richmond, Virginia. We've got less than 2 weeks now before the end of the legislative session. So things are continuing to move pretty quickly. I mean, I won't say that things are starting to, because we've seen these gun control bills move fairly rapidly through the legislature. But where are we right now? I mean, both the House and Senate are taking up a number of bills. What do you think is going to end up going to a conference committee and seeing these details or these differences trying to get hammered out behind closed doors?
We've got 3 Senate bills that are waiting on conferees to be appointed. That's Senate Bill 69, the handgun rationing bill, Senate Bill 263, which is the bill that takes away the option of having a video online training course that qualifies for your competence certification to apply for a concealed handgun permit. And then Senate Bill 593, which is a licensed family day homes bill As it came out of the Senate, that bill only applied to licensed daycare centers or to home daycare. And the House version also has unlicensed, which means the friend that we had at church back when my kids were young and needed daycare before school would have to have their guns locked up and stored separate from their ammunition while they were keeping my kids and a couple of other ones. So those three are definitely in conference waiting for conferees. And it's my thought they're probably waiting for the House version to be finished in the Senate, and they're going to take both bills with the same conferees, is my thought on that.
Okay.
You've got in the House, you've got 9 bills that are on final reading today. And that's basically the entire, group of gun bills that's left. And that's, background checks, House Bill number 2, House Bill number 9, which is a lost and stolen, firearms bill. You've got, 264. Actually, these are all in the Senate on second reading, I think. House Bill 9 could die on the floor today because Chap Peterson voted against that in, committee on, Monday. And then Linwood Lewis voted against the Senate version on the floor. So we keep Lewis, where he was with the Senate bill. That one could actually be killed on the floor today.
And that's, then you've got House Bill 9, as you said, that's lost and stolen.
That's a lost and stolen, reporting lost and stolen firearm.
Okay.
With a civil penalty. Peterson kept his vote on that just as he did, prior to crossover on the Senate bill. So I'm looking at the good possibility of that one dying on the House, on the Senate floor today. And then you've got, the demonstration of competence bill. The Senate added back in, that's House Bill 264, the Senate bill, the Senate version added back in references to the NRA. We know that's going to end up in conference because the House already rejected, already insisted that their version of the Senate companion bill on that, taking out references to the NRA, go to conference. So we know that one's going to be in conference as well.
All right, let's stop there for just a second if we can and talk about that, because I've heard a number of folks who are expressing concern about this. And the concern is not, why are they taking the NRA's name out of this? It's because, you know, NRA certified firearms instructors are the most common certified firearms instructors out there. So if you're using NRA training courses, I mean, that's sort of the gold standard. There are a lot of Virginians who are concerned that if that language that talks about the NRA is removed, that it's going to become much more difficult to find the firearms instructors who could actually provide the training required to get a Virginia concealed carry license.
That's exactly right. And even the patron of the Senate bill, Senate Bill 263, said that on the floor, that his concern about the House amendments, changes to that bill, would make it more difficult for people to be trained. He says, at a time that we want people to be trained, that bill, what the House did to the bill, makes it that much harder for someone to get trained.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So that one's going to conference committee. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but
that's fine. That's fine. No, absolutely. Then you've got the local control bill, House Bill 421. The Senate has amended that bill. I'm not so sure that either one of those are going to end up in conference because they both, the Senate bill was amended in committee on Friday in the House. And the House version was amended to the way the House changed the Senate version when 421 was in Senate Judiciary on Monday. So that one may not go. The red flag bill.
Hang on one second. Let's go back to local control for a second. You say that the Senate has. I know. I'm sorry, Dave. You say the Senate has basically adopted the House language, that the amended House language that was changed. Now, the House version originally was much worse than the Senate bill. Both of them were bad bills, but the House version was much more broad in terms of gutting the state's firearms preemption law. What does the bill look like at the moment? Is it closer to that original House version, or is it closer to the Senate version that basically, it weakened firearms preemption, but it didn't completely destroy it?
It is now closer to the Senate version. The Senate version was, they added parks, I think, to the county parks, to the bill, on Friday in House, in the House committee, and this, and the patron of the bill came in, he had to change it. And, he was comfortable with what they had done. And he said he thought that what their Senate judiciary was going to do on Monday was going to do the same thing to their version. So they've made the House bill a little less bad, mm-hmm. but they made the Senate bill a little more bad, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yep.
By adding in, I think, the parks. There were basically three subsections that listed out, like, buildings leased by local government or and buildings owned by local government, and then your streets around a permitted event. And I think they added in county or local parks that are owned by the locality. So they made the House version less worse and the Senate version a little more worse, but neither one are as bad as they started out to be.
Okay. And but again, neither one of them good for gun owners or for the exactly. exercise of our rights. All right. You mentioned red flag legislation. What where are we with red flag? Because we had heard that there was a deal that had been struck between the House and the Senate on what this final language was going to look like.
Yeah, from what I can tell from looking at both bills, they're now in a similar posture. And in fact, Senator Barker said in House Public Safety on Friday, he doesn't think that now they will have to go to conference because the bills will be similar after what the Senate judiciary was going to do to the House version on this past Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So they've reduced the number of law enforcement officers you have to make your report to. In the Senate version, it was two law enforcement officers. And so now they both have just one law enforcement officer that would be, that the report would be made to and the investigation would be done. You still don't have the situation where you'd have a no-knock, type of, serving of a warrant or anything like that. You would, the law enforcement would go and serve the, substantial risk order, and then they would have a certain number of, to either, they could voluntarily turn over their firearms then. If they did not, then they'd have to come back with a search warrant. And that was done because there were some members that said, look, you're going to go with a search warrant, you could find things you weren't going in there to look for that could put people in jeopardy. And so that's why you can't go in, you can't serve the risk order on someone and then go do a search right then. You have to come back if they don't give you voluntarily the firearms. And a comment was made in committee on Monday that this bill was patterned after the Florida bill, which passed with Rick Scott's signature.
Yeah. Okay. They did remove as well the requirement that a Commonwealth's attorney sign off on this. Is that right, or is that still in there?
That did. They took out the language that required consultation with the Commonwealth's attorney,
mm-hmm.
and when that was brought to the attention of the committee, one of the GOP members, I think it was either Obenchain or Stewart, asked the committee counsel if that was correct, and he says, well, typically law enforcement confers with the Commonwealth's attorney anyway before they get a search warrant. So I don't buy that,
no.
But that's the posture it's in now. It does not require consultation. I expect when they debate this on the floor in the Senate today that Senator Norbert is going to try to put that back in because he's the one who actually put that in. In the Senate version in committee back on January 13th.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like this is, you know, as you talk about kind of the horse trading that goes on back and forth, we talked about the local control bill, and it looks like the Senate kind of got its way on the local control bill, but it looks like on red flag, kind of sounds like the House is getting their way. And this is going to be a bill that does not have the due process protections that the Senate version had, which, by the way, weren't enough, but the House version of the bill, that the language that's been agreed to on now, doesn't have nearly those due process protections. And frankly, you know, again, I know this is an afterthought for these lawmakers, but I've heard several Democrats in Virginia, Dave, call this a suicide prevention bill, say this is going to address mm-hmm. the mental health crisis in the state of Virginia. And the words mental health do not appear in the red flag bill. This is not a mental health bill at all. There is no mental health component to this bill.
That's exactly right. Senator Stewart made that case very clearly in committee on Monday as well.
Okay. All right. So is that it? Is that the full lineup?
Well, you got three other bills.
Okay.
Two of them, One has to do with protective orders and possession of firearms and surrender. That's House Bill 1004. The other one's House Bill 1080, is kind of a response to Lee County trying to get, was it Special Conservators of the Peace?
Oh, yeah, down in, was it Lee County?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is kind of, when you read this bill, Lee County immediately pops in. It lays out who can and can't possess a firearm or school property. And Conservators of the Peace are not members that can do that. So
okay.
The public that would be able to do that. And then the last one is House Bill 1083, Minors Allowing Access to Firearms. This is a bill that actually the Senate killed the Senate version. And when the patron walked in there on Monday in the committee, it had been changed to leave the age at 14, which is the current law on, quote, recklessly leaving a firearm around a minor. And the only thing it does, it raises the penalty from a Class 3 misdemeanor to a Class 1 misdemeanor. As it was originally submitted, introduced in the House, it was a Class 6 felony, and it would have lowered the age to 14. So that was enough to get Senator Peterson to switch his vote, as well as Senator Deeds, and it got out of committee and will be on third reading today.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that was really disappointing because, you know, frankly, I'm not sure what the argument is about, well, it shouldn't be a felony, but it's okay to be a misdemeanor to do this. I given the objections that Senator Peterson had to that original language, I was disappointed. Not necessarily surprised, but I was disappointed to see that that flip on this issue.
This is a sign of caution for gun owners because, you know, Senator Peterson also voted against the so-called assault weapons bill, 961. This is an illustration of what can happen if you chip away at a bill just enough to get to the concerns of individual members that say, well, I can't abide by a gun ban.
Yep.
And then if you can explain it to where it's supposedly not a ban and you capture as few firearms as possible, that you can end up passing a bill. It's still very bad.
Absolutely. And you're right. Gun owners do need to be aware of this because we know that Northam's gun ban bill is coming back next year. We know that outside of Linwood Lewis, who I think has said, I'm not voting for any Gunner magazine ban, you know, these other three senators, Senator Deed, Senator Edwards, Senator Peterson, have all sort of said they're okay with the idea of a quote unquote assault weapons ban in theory. They just objected to that specific language. And so we know that the governor is going to be working with these senators over the coming months to say, all right, well, if you wouldn't accept that, what would you accept? How far can we go? And gun owners, you know, we may be out of the woods this session with that centerpiece of Governor Northam's gun control agenda, but it's coming back next year.
Absolutely. And I have no doubt that rather than this bill 961 dying in committee over the summer, like bills that are carried over normally do, this bill is going to be back up in a different form with more amendments to try to address the concerns of Senator Peterson. You know, Soroville voted to pass it by as well. I have no doubt that he'd vote for a bill that captured less firearms. He is not a friend of gun owners, and he just happened to be with us on this one. Senator Deed just said he thinks that AR-15s and AK-47s are, quote, impractical. Gun owners need to use the amount of time they have between now and next session to show him how practical these firearms are. There's a gun range just outside of his district. There was Banham Rifle and Pistol Club up in Albemarle County, just outside of Charlottesville. Charlottesville is part of Senator Deed's district. When they have competitions, they need to invite him down so he can see just how practical these firearms are and how they're used every day for competition, for hunting even, for self-defense. We're going to be working with our gun clubs. We've got 26 affiliated gun clubs around the Commonwealth, and we're going to work with them to get them to invite these legislators that we need to show these are practical firearms. These aren't military firearms, as Delegate Levine would have you believe. And why so many people own these firearms in the country. So.
Absolutely. I would say I think that's fantastic what you're doing, Dave. And if there's any way we can help promote that, let me know. But I would also say there's a big difference between impractical and illegal. Even if you don't think an AR-15 is a a practical firearm. I'm not sure where that automatically leads to, so we should make it illegal to buy one. That to me is just sort of a non sequitur. Maybe I'll be able to have that conversation with Senator Deeds at some point before now in the next session. Who should we be contacting if we're a Virginia gun owner right now, Dave? Should we be contacting our delegates and our senators at this point?
Absolutely, because here's what's going to happen. When these go into conference, they're going to come out, and it's an up or down vote. We don't get to see what goes on in conference, so there's going to be a lot of horse trading, and the bill could come out looking totally different than it goes in.
How concerned are you that that's going to happen with some of these pieces of legislation?
I am concerned about the training bill, because Delegate Helmer is the delegate in the House of Delegates that has been most he's been most determined to remove the language on the NRA certified training.
Well, he's the guy who introduced the bill that was going to shut down the NRA range, and then it would have shut down other ranges as well. I mean, he hates the NRA, and he wants to, and he's up there in Northern Virginia, and he wants to send a message, right? I'm coming after you, NRA. Again, playing politics over public safety, but he's the one pushing this on the House side.
He is the one pushing this on the House side. Or at least in committee, he's the one who's speaking to it the most and being most vociferous about it. I'm also concerned about the local control bill going, if it goes into committee. Right now, it may not go into a conference committee. But that's another one that could come up, because there's folks in the House that are a lot more to the left when it comes to, you know, opposing firearms than they are in the Senate. And it depends on who gets on these conference committees. You get two Democrats and one Republican, and it depends on who the two Democrats are on each committee.
Are you, I know the last time that we talked, you had mentioned the fact that if Northam really wanted to push this issue, he could reintroduce his gun ban language perhaps during conference committee, right? And let's just add that to this local control bill. Are you as concerned about that, or do you think that Governor Northam is going to let this dog lie for the rest of the session and not try to sneak his gun ban, magazine ban, suppressor ban, trigger activator ban language into one of these bills?
I won't say that it won't happen, but I'm not as concerned now as I have been just knowing what several senators have said when speaking to other bills.
Okay.
I don't, and the fact that Secretary Moran has worked with a lot of these members trying to lessen the impact, but try to make just enough changes to get enough people on board to vote for the bills. So I'm not as concerned now that that's going to happen in a conference committee. Anything could happen with the governor's amendments, so we'll just have to wait to see how that process plays out.
All right, one last question. I know I've kept you for a long time here, but Dick Saslaw came out and actually admitted, I had this conversation with Senator Bill Stanley. I told him that the sheriff's pay raises were killed because of the sheriffs opposing our gun control agenda. Didn't really get into it. Didn't want to do a full interview, but did tell a TV station that, Senator Stanley's version of the conversation is correct. What does that say about the politics that's being played by these anti-gun Democrats in the Senate and in the House right now? We saw the House committee killed Senator Peterson's very non-controversial bill that would have allowed for, part-time law enforcement officers to purchase their service weapon when they retired, passed unanimously out of the Senate, killed in a House committee because Peterson voted against Ralph Northam's gun ban. Then you see the sheriff's pay raises turned down because they've objected to these gun control laws. Is this type of petty politics? Are gun owners aware of this? And what can we do to make the average Virginian aware that this is going on?
Every gun owner probably has someone they know that's not a gun owner, so they need to share this information. I'm not surprised at Senator Saslaw's comments, because I've known him for a long time, and he hasn't changed over the years. It just also shows us that the governor was not being completely honest when he said there'd be no retribution for sanctuary localities, sanctuary counties, because a lot of the sheriffs stood up and were supportive of this and showed up in committee meetings. A lot of them didn't speak, but they were there showing their support for gun owners.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that we just need to let our friends and our neighbors know that while they may not own firearms themselves, that they support our right to do so, that this is the type of thing that's going on. It's hyper-partisanship. You know, D.C. has come to Virginia. You know, there was a time when there was a lot of, you could get along no matter what side of the aisle you were on. I saw something in committee on Monday that I'd never seen before. Sasol just, it was back and forth between him and Obenchain, and Sasol started it. And even Andrew Goddard stood up and spoke, when speaking to a bill, said that that was very inappropriate with Sasol. He didn't call Sasol by name, but everyone knew Stalker too. And Senator Norman said the same thing.
Wow. That's, I think they're showing their true colors. And I hope that Virginians are paying attention. Dave Adams with the Virginia Shooting Sports Association. Thank you, sir, for coming on the program. And I know we'll be talking again very soon. Unfortunately, probably the next time it'll be when Governor Northam is signing some of these bills into law.
I'm sure he's going to have signing ceremonies. He's going to make a big deal out of it.
I'm sure he will. Who knows? Maybe he'll even invite Bloomberg down.
Bloomberg might not have a presidential campaign by then. So.
No, we can only hope. Dave Adams joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Thanks, Dave. We'll talk to you soon. All right, I tell you what, that conversation with Dave Adams, I was fascinated by it, but a little bit longer than our normal interviews, so kind of crunching on time here. Maybe we'll double up on our armed citizen story at the very least on tomorrow's Cam & Company, which hopefully will be coming to you from the 2020 Conservative Political Action Conference at the National Harbor in National Harbor, Maryland. At the Gaylord Convention Center. We will hopefully, knock on wood, not have any technical issues, be able to bring you shows on Thursday and Friday, and who knows, maybe an interview or two for next week as well. Tentatively scheduled on tomorrow's program, Rob O'Donnell from Brothers Before Others, who's going to be speaking on one of the panels there at CPAC. We'll talk about some of the lies that we've heard from some of these anti-gun politicians, and get Rob's take from a law enforcement perspective, a pro-Second Amendment law enforcement perspective. In the meantime, thank you for being a part of the program. I do appreciate you joining us today. Hope that you have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Bearing Arms Cam & Company at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and more. You can also subscribe to Town Hall Media at YouTube, and that way you never miss a program. You can become a VIP member of Bearing Arms at BearingArms.com. Get exclusive commentary, analysis, and more, as well as help support the Second Amendment journalism that we're doing there each and every day. And don't forget to check out BearingArms.com multiple times a day to get the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. All right, have a great rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company.